Hello and welcome to recording number 28 of Gary Gygax's Artifact of Evil, an annotated reading. Tonight is August 24th, 2021. We're rejoining the story after we've now heard in the previous recording from both how Obmi has reorganized his little group and how the Lossals are acting as kind of like the scouting force that head into the sides, and he has set it up so that he has Keek going back, and also the other magic users. So there's supposedly only two magic users in this group. And, we, in that respect, we learned a little more about, what this group is with Obmi. And with so many of them being just Lossals, there are at least 100 Lossals left. But, at that point, it is very, with the high level of just Geller and Chert and Gord, they could probably take apart those 100 Lossals if they weren't attacked all at once and overwhelmed. Because at this point, they're all very, very high level. They are weak on magic users. As a bard, there's a lot of things that a Geller can do, but a bard is really such a multi-class, So, now tonight, where we reached the two boys, Thatch and Chad, they were explaining to them, and, one of the last things was that they were explaining to them what a gnoll was, and I was just mentioning how that is such a good thing to show when you're dealing with the game level, zero level characters, and even other characters where they should not just be immediately able to recognize even some common monsters. They should have a background where those monsters were introduced. All right. And I'm going to restart. It's page 272. And the third paragraph from the end. "What's to be done, then?" asked the bard, looking at Gord. There had been a subtle change in roles, the young man noted. Over the time he had known Geller, the one-eyed man had been many things to him. Father-like, a mentor, a leader, a rescuer, and more. The shift had occurred subtly, all right, but it was distinct. Not only was Geller now treating him as an equal, but at times the bard was deferring to Gord, almost as if the young thief were a superior. This was a bit disturbing, but there was no time for pondering the matter now. "We move ahead," said Gord, "and if we find the band of gnolls spread out in our path, you four turn back a ways and stay put. I'll get by them without difficulty and catch up with Obmi and his filthy train of scum. They'll be deserting the damned dwarf now, not flocking to him. Somewhere along the trail, somehow, I will get the chance to kill that miserable bastard and get the second key," the thief said vehemently. "I'm certain it is on his twisted body somewhere, and I'll tear him apart to find it." "Get going," Chert said practically. "Listen now, my boys, here's what you two are to do if we meet any of these half-human scum, and there is no way for you to get away. Hold your spears before you, thus." And he went on with his instructions as their small group headed for the hard-beaten pathway leading toward the north and the realm of the demonic Uz. "They're ahead, all right," Chert muttered as he slipped back to join his friends. He had gone ahead on the path to see if Gord's recounting of the conversation overheard was as a small midnight black tomcat had been correct. It was. Gord had said that Obmi had ordered the gnoll captain, a huge monster named Harharf, to remain behind to prevent any enemy from following, while the remainder of the force went northward as before. Gord said that the Knoll leader had seemed almost relieved to be given such duty, for the fear of the predatory killer of Lossels was spreading from orcs to Knolls. All right, break. So, I've been commented just before this in chat that, it's interesting that in Gord's case, how he his transformation into the leopard kind of is a reduction in strength, because at this point, Gord is so powerful, especially, his backstab abilities, his dexterity, his high thief skills, and the amount of damage he can cause with a backstab is just, at this point, is a shocking amount. And then the other thing is, but he is in leopard form. He is able, I think, probably to climb into the trees easier, even easier than as his true self. Now, and more than strong enough to kill Lossels, who are just, I believe, either, 1 to 2 hit die creatures, depending upon addition. And then that might have been missed, is that he went through all of Obmi's group, the center group, when he was transformed into a black tomcat. So Gord was small and unnoticeable and quick and made it through undetected. So here we have like the two examples. It's kind of like the Lossels. The Lossels are very weak creatures, and but they do have a good use. They are very able to go up into the treetops. So the Lossels are off trail, especially useful. So they're acting as a buffer and a scouting force. So. Uz had commanded about 60 of the Lossels to the front and 20 each to either side. Even if they're just there to take casualties, them taking casualties will relay any attacking force and giving Obmi and his stronger group in the main. Now, we hear here that the Knolls are being told to stand back and, stop or at least give warning of anyone following them. So that's what Chert has discovered. Now, Chert has given some more instructions to the two boys, Thatch and Shad. So again, if these two do survive, they are getting a lot of practical instruction, on learning, on becoming warriors, even more than hunters. And I do like that example of what you can do and how what it looks like to train zero level characters up to first level. All right, I am going to restart. We are on we're on page 273. And it is 6 paragraphs from the end of the page. All right, Gord nodded. This is where we part company, then. Maybe if I picked off a few of those fleabag bastards, the rest would take off, Chort said half-heartedly. That would not serve, my friend, so why risk it, Geller said softly. Gord shook the hands of the others. Chert, the bard, Thatch, and then little Shad. You'll kill some for me, the boy said earnestly, and they all laughed. Without further ado, Gord left. He went on foot, carrying his weapons and little else. The forest would provide for him. And the dwarf had begun to move at night. He thought they had lost the game. Chert was unable to see to travel and fight in darkness, for he had no magical sight, as did his adult comrades. The lads needed tending. Something had to be found to slow, if not halt, the humanoid band that surrounded and protected the dwarf and his prize. Then Gord had decided to experiment. The cat lord told him that the ring he wore conveyed the power of lycanthropy, and Gord could assume cat form at will. The other powers of the ring worked, and Gord had no reason to doubt the Master Cat's word about form change. It was one thing to play at being a cat, to call oneself Black Cat and be a cat burglar. It was quite another to actually become a genuine leopard, or even a domestic cat. Gord had just never wished to be anything other than his human self, but desperate circumstances call for desperate measures. Without telling his companions, the young thief had slipped away and tried the power of the ring. It worked, of course. Transformation took only a minute, and it was only slightly painful. Everything he wore simply became part of his new form somehow, clothing and boots, weapons, and everything. Gord could see parts of his new body. He was a cat, a big leopard with inky coat and long tail. Gord the leopard had padded to a nearby pool and peered at his reflection in the water. He looked splendid and handsome, green eyes, long whiskers, a long pinkish-red tongue, and huge fangs of gleaming white. How nice it would be to eat some fresh meat, drink from the pool here, and then gaze at his reflection until sleep came. There was a broad, comfortable-looking limb nearby, where he could rest, too. Gord had had to jerk his mind back quickly. How easy it was to fall into thinking of the form one had assumed, and what would happen if he allowed this to occur. Perhaps he would take animal form more and more, eventually living out his life as a leopard, not man. Gord shuddered and willed himself back to his own shape. In a minute, he was human again, clothed and equipped as before. All right, break. So, this ties in with what we read before when Gord was, Lossel was talking to Abmi and saying that the clubs and arrows didn't seem to do the leopard any damage. So Gord isn't just transforming into a cat or a leopard. He's it says here, he actually has the lycanthrope form, so that he's getting those benefits where it needs to be a plus or a silver weapon to damage him. And so Gord does gain a little strength from that. And then we learn that this form of lycanthropy melds his clothing and weapons and possessions into the newly formed body, which I continuously see. We see the illustrations many a time of a werewolf with shredded clothing, you know, as the clothing that it's wearing when it transforms does not do that. So I'm not sure how they've spelled out lycanthropy in other editions, but normally I did not think that the lycanthrope brought a non, you know, the clothing was either torn or fell off or and possessions were dropped as it became more. And also, say like with a werewolf, it becomes a kind of man-wolf rather than just a wolf, whereas Gord, he is becoming an actual leopard. So it's a strange form of lycanthropy that he's getting with the ring. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 274, and second paragraph from the end. I'm sorry, it's the last paragraph. All right, as he stood pondering this, Gord recalled the feeling of being a large, powerful cat. He wanted to go back to that form, try the feline muscles, bound and spring, climb and hunt. To see and experience the world as a leopard was an interesting desire. Well, so was drinking alcohol, in a far different but similarly insidious way, and the vapors of herbs, fungi eating, and extractions of certain other substances all had lures that ensnared some humans. Gord could resist these habits and addictions because he enjoyed life without them. He knew he must do the same with respect to this human-to-cat power he possessed. It must become a tool used only for purposes necessary to some cause, and used only when Gord must. The others heard the news with excitement, not having any of the reservations that Gord did. When he told them of the strange feelings the change evoked within him, Geller had shrugged them off, and Chert had told him to enjoy. Upon reconsideration, he realized that druids and magic users assumed many sorts of forms on a regular basis. Still, this wasn't lycanthropy, was it? And Geller had pointed out that the ring had a magical power, so strictly speaking, there was no shape-shifting within Gord, and the whole was less lycanthropic than Curly's ability to become a hawk or a turtle for a brief time. Gord gave up his reservations. He had stalked through the night, bounding along the forest floor, climbing trees and using branches as a roadway, slipping through places two-leggers would find impossible. It had been easier to move ahead of the mass of smelly, noisy humanoids, and the gabbling ape creatures who swung clumsily through the branches. It had been the simplest of things to catch and kill the first Lossal, for the stupid creature didn't know enough to flee from certain death. Had it been leopard-slaying baboon or human-slaying orc, no matter, when the clubs and small bolts had struck him, Gord the leopard felt only small thumps and fly bites. Momentary fear for his safety gave way to feelings of invulnerability and triumph. Now he could single-handedly slay the whole filthy tribe of two-leaguers and get the prize. He had laughed full in the face of one gaping Lossal, causing it to leap groundward, chattering in fear. Reason returned when he saw a stick-thin elf in robes that bespoke magic staring upward at him sometime later. Cat contempt for so puny a creature caused him to stare haughtily down at this puny thing. As the puny thing began muttering softly and waving his arms, Gord's ears heard every sound the creature made, and then the human part of Gord's mind panicked, and the cat portion reacted by leaping away. Just in time, that great spring, it carried him across some 30 feet to another tree limb, slightly below the one he'd been upon, and along it to another, all in a second. Behind his black-furred tail, there was a flash and sizzle of energy. As a lightning stroke hit the spot where his graceful form had lain only a second ago, and Lossal screamed and fell like ripe fruit from the struck tree. Thereafter, Gord made an effort, and the human mind always controlled the leopard strike. All right, so yesterday we had heard that, you know, Keek had launched a lightning bolt, and we were wondering exactly what had happened, because it said the leopard escaped, and it is true. Now, like a fireball will go out in a sphere, much harder to avoid if you're within that area. And here, Gord managed to leap completely aside of the much more narrow pathway of a lightning bolt. And I know that stroke was supposed to have killed about 6 Lossals. Now, you know, Lossals, even with a saving throw, there's no way that, a fairly powerful magic user like Keek is going to not slay them outright. So, you know, it was interesting, especially because there was wondering, not just by me, exactly what had happened and how Gord had managed to, avoid that lightning bolt. All right.
It was reflexes.
Yes, and we do get this here where Gord But this is the first time he's used these things, and Gord is a little worried about the cat mind and the Gord mind, and the cat mind being a very seductive existence. So Gord is worrying about the use of the ring and the possibility of staying in cat form.
That right there shows me that he's grown up a lot, and he probably won't have a problem. I think it would be a lot more dangerous to someone who didn't even consider those possibilities.
Yes, and we get this reinforced by what he had just recently said in this reading, where Geller has changed his dealings with Gord, so that now Gord is being seen as an equal and sometimes even somebody whose lead that Geller is willing to follow. So we're seeing that at least in these cases, Gord has now definitely grown up. He's also, you know, he shouldn't be all that young. I know that at one point there was mention that they thought he was about 21, but really he was supposedly gone 8 years when he left Greyhawk, you know, the city of Greyhawk, and I think that put him much nearer to 27 or 28. So Gord actually is not, you know, really all that young. He's not a boy by any means. And he is very experienced and very intelligent. And Chert, you know, although they're best friends, Chert seems like he's a merry boon companion, but definitely not all that intelligent, not like Gord is. Whereas Gord has these sweeping abilities, you know, including comeliness, that was one of, I think, the abilities that Gygax was fooling around with at the time in the, you know, in the mid-80s. You know, adding a seventh ability.
That's similar to charisma, or?
Yes, charisma is charm. So what Gygax has done is comeliness is physical attraction, and charisma is charm, you know, charm, animal magnetism, the ability to be likable, not necessarily attractive, but to be likable, and certainly something that a con man like Gord would, you know, really benefit from a high charisma. Because it's noted that his comeliness is decent, but not, you know, not super high up there. So we have a posted here about the lycanthropes from the Monster Manual. I assume that's Monster Manual 1. They acquire the, eventually acquire whatever the alignment is of the form. Oh, it's the DMG, first edition DMG. Yes, and if we see here, the lycanthrope loses interest in its belongings. So whatever we're seeing from Gord is this very powerful enchantment, which actually takes in, you know, the weapons and clothing of the, when Gord changes to be a little cat. He's a little cat with all the weapons and clothing he had with him in human form. If he transforms back to human form, he's got all his clothing and weapons with him again. So that's extraordinarily handy. So you're not going to lose your possessions while you're in that form. I would assume then that if Gord were slain in or leopard or cat form, he would probably transform back to his human shape. So that's just supposition. It seems to me if he's going to draw in that equipment while he's in wear shape, and it's very strange. You can't really call him a wear, but obviously Gygax does want him to have the invulnerability to normal weapons. Only superior strength is supposed to counteract that, so that if you're like a lycanthrope or that you can get damaged from somebody like a giant.
It says he's wearish. On 274, it says that Rexfield has said that the ring granted the power of lycanthropy, but not necessarily lycanthropy itself.
Yes, which is very handy. I mean, he doesn't suffer from the like the curse of Lycan 3. I doubt his alignment changes to that of the lycanthrope. And also, he doesn't appear to be changing into a, like it mentions in this write-up in the DMG about were-rats who carry swords. It doesn't, he is not becoming a human-shaped leopard, or he is becoming the leopard or the little house cat himself, you know, so he looks no different from the tomcat he's transforming into. He's not like the werewolf who is, you know, like half human, half wolf. If he changes into that leopard, he's a leopard. With the, some of the benefits,
I'm sorry.
Oh, that, I was just going to say, he's got the benefits, but not the the curses of lycanthropy.
Yeah, it seems like both consciousnesses dwell together and neither necessarily dominates each other.
All right. And this I'm going to restart that. This I'm especially because this next paragraph begins exactly with, begins exactly with what's happening. Now, here's been posted another thing about some of the powers that Gord has that don't really fit in with the lycanthrope. Any damage over 50% of hit points sustained may cause them to be afflicted with a disease. Yes, I don't think Gord is spreading lycanthrope either. He has no, I don't think the moon or moons have any effect on him. It talks about the torn and shredded clothes when he wakes up, which he is not going to have. I mean, these losels, they do not see that leopard as anything but a leopard. Now, I don't know if that means that they recognize, you know, a leopard, or if the Vesvi or the Felreeve, where the losels originally come from, whether they should have leopards in them, you know, because, or just definitely some kind of predatory cat there, where the losels recognize what that is. I don't remember if they named, I don't think they named Gord's form as a leopard, just like a big cat. All right, I'm restarting. It's page 276 and the second paragraph. Gord pondered briefly the dichotomy of thinking. Of course, the power of shape-changing would be useless if the ability to properly utilize the new form were missing. Simplicity itself. The trick was to keep the real mind in power while allowing the new one to handle the body as it was designed to control. Human mind directs, cat mind operates. Easy to visualize, difficult in the extreme to accomplish. Too much direction, and the cat brain was overridden. Then the leopard body became clumsy and unable to perform its natural functioning. On the other hand, too little monitoring, too much freedom, and the cat took over the human portion, submerging it to little more than a vague memory, or relegating it to a sort of conscience that could do little but scold or praise. It took an hour, but eventually Gord managed to get the correct balance. Like, all right, so this is just what Chris was, you know, talking about, so I wanted to jump to that. Now, the other thing that occurs to me is this reminds me, this struggle of for balance, that reminds me of some of the conflicts you get with an enchanted, intelligent weapon, where there's always been this struggle for dominance, and sometimes the weapon is in dominant control over the person. So I think if you wanted to take this little segment here about and use it for as an idea of what it is for struggles of personality. As has been mentioned by the Cat Lord, Gord is a special case. He was a little surprised even at that at first. In the short story in Knight Errant, where Gord first meets the Cat Lord.
Rats.
Yes, cats versus rats. And Gord is a little surprised at that. Now the cat lord's a little surprised at Gord's I guess ability with the ring.
I think he said he attuned the ring.
Yes, and you know, he mentioned how at first Gord hadn't, you know, so they've been knowledgeable about the possessor of the ring. I still find that story they came up with in this book, I'm really not sure if, I don't know, it just seems unlikely to me that the thief would have this ring, and that Gord would be the one to rediscover it. I really thought at first that the ring was the possession that Leda had mentioned was in that special box. And it may very well have been, but it does make more sense that Gord would not have received the ring until the point where he was strong enough and in a position to keep hold of it, rather than as a young boy with that ring where it could have been taken away from him. You know, especially when he went in the workhouse very early on in Saga of Old City, that anything like this ring with a little gem, you know, they were so poor then. But even that would be a mighty treasure for a young Gord.
Yeah, I think he probably would have sold it.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been have to be some major revelation at that point that Gygax did not want to do.
Or the headsman might have taken it from him or something. I mean, there's so many ways he could have lost that ring.
Yeah, and especially when he went to the workhouse, and it just seems like they definitely would have searched him, and he was caught, with stolen jewelry. They definitely would have stripped him down and searched him for any other things he might have stolen.
Yeah, I don't think that bailiff would have let anything slip.
Yeah, and, you know, Gord was exhibiting, I think, some dexterity in that theft, although he mistook his ability to get away with it with the way that the merchants handled thieves rather than the merchant themselves, which makes sense because the merchants got to watch their goods. They can't just go running after one piece then have everything else they own stolen. So, you know, it makes sense that they would have that merchant's cant that would signal other merchants and guardsmen that something had happened. So, you know, Gord may not have been that good a thief. He was definitely noticed, and he was definitely pointed out. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 276 and the third paragraph down. By then, the company of humanoids had been halted. A perimeter ringed with guards and alert leaders stationed where they could protect the center of the encampment. Gord the Leopard managed to harass the ape orcs, but the exercise was useless. When he saw the leaders of the company gathering to hold some sort of council, he acted at once. If he could assume leopard form so easily, why not that of a small domestic cat? Springing to the ground, Gord concentrated on shifting from leopard to tom, and in the usual time he was as he wished. A rather large one, but a tomcat nevertheless. In this form he had crept through the camp to where he could hear the words of the group gathered. Gord the cat arrived just at the conclusion of the meeting. He heard the dwarf tell the huge, heavily armored gnoll, who stood respectfully there, that he was to block the path. At least that's what it seemed to be, for Gord had scant proficiency with the bastard tongue of orc and gnolls, and the rest of the humanoid species. The gnoll chief was reluctant, and argued. Abmi insisted, telling him that only a weak force could be expected, something like, few soft men who you will kill and loot, were more like the exact terms the dwarf used. He clinched the hole by mentioning that the cat devil would follow Abmi and the Lossals. Then the gnoll had grinned hideously in agreement and gone off. The scouting group will ride well in advance tomorrow morning, the gaunt elf called Keek had said with a cackle. Yes, that is so, the dwarf replied. And then Abmi smiled for the first time since Gord the cat had been watching, crouched in the shadows beneath a low shrub. Klabdol, Keek had said, with a friendly arm around the half-orc's wide shoulder, "You must come into our tent to get special instructions about your role as chief of the scouting force." The half-breed's ugly face had shown delight at such a display of favor, while Abmi suggesting a bit of wine as they talked, the three had stepped into the tent shared by the elf and dwarf. A ring of guards surrounded it, so there was no way for Gord to get close enough to hear more. Belly brushing the ground, he had slunk from the encampment, shifting into leopard form, and loped to the place where his friends waited. The whole story fascinated them, and then they had checked to see if Gord's interpretation of the conversation had been correct. The presence of over half a hundred of the hyena-faced humanoids was ample confirmation. The gnolls prevented further pursuit by all but Gord, for even if the others managed to slip around the widely spread humanoid band, they could well be caught between gnolls and the main body later. Even with Gord's work, there were several hundred still in the main party. If Lossels and orcs deserted in numbers, 100 men and orcs were still too many when backed by the tough dwarf and the spellcaster Keek. Gord's friends would have to remain behind, for only he could now hope to accomplish their mission. All right, break. I wanted to point out here that Gygax is showing the language use and language limitations, where Gord, doesn't saying how he doesn't speak the Gnoll, and is not really familiar with a lot of the humanoid language that is going on. I thought that was well done. We also see Abmi once again, his same promises, like he promised the Gleed when they split off, and also how the final thing that clinches the Gnoll's obedience is that he promises that the Devil Cat will be pursuing him. Now we get some idea of the numbers. Now, there are at least 100 Lossels left, and then 100 humanoids or bandits and such in the main body, and then there were even 50 more gnolls. Now, in the story, it was mentioned that as they moved forward at first, they would encounter various of these humanoid bands and sign them on, to increase his force, because Abmi really does have a varied band between the Lossels, the half-orcs, the evil woods folk, and the gnolls. He's picked up a lot of different things. And I think that's one of the things that is a strength for us, is he does seem to be able to easily recruit, or his minions also seem to be easily to recruit these varied bands of humanoids and adding them to their forces. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 277. And it is the final paragraph. Gord was still uneasy about changing from man to cat. Bashful or ashamed, he wasn't sure which. After the farewell, the young thief moved eastward into the forest, swinging wide to the right-hand side of the pathway. Moving as quietly as any woodsman, Gord made certain that he was several hundred yards off the trail, and well away from the observation of his companions. Then he allowed the transformation to occur. In a minute, a huge black panther stretched itself. The cat yawned almost lazily, flexed its claws, stretched, and then moved like a bolt from an arbalest into the trees. Seconds later, several gnolls moved into the small area left clear by a falling tree. They peered around carefully, their bows in axe-like bardishes at the ready. But there was nothing threatening there. One asked another if he had seen something black a moment before. The other grunted a non-committal reply. The humanoids went on with their scouting, looking for humans to kill. It was an easy manner to travel as a leopard through the old trees of the Vesvi. The ground below was perfect for running, while the thick interlocking branches above made a highway for a big cat to walk upon. Gord the panther, and he now simply thought of both human and animal forms, as Gord elected to stay on the leaf-matted forest floor until he approached the main body of Obmi's band. His panther's sense of smell would give him all the warning he needed when he was near. He allowed his human mind to ride that of the cat, so that the feline part received and sorted out sensory information, while the human part gave it identifiers that related to human experience. Odors were the difficult path. Break. All right, now, you notice that he's now a panther rather than a leopard. And here, Chris has put up a little thing about panthers. Let's see. Panthers are an interesting group of animals among the carnivores. A panther could be any big cat, jaguar, leopard, or puma. Okay. So panther is more a generalization of certain kinds of big cats. Jaguar, puma, leopard. I think the leopard is the largest out of those three. I seem to remember a puma being smaller, and maybe even a jaguar being smaller. Anyway, we do get that. I thought for a moment that he was transforming into another kind of cat, but I just assume that he's calling Gord as Panther Gord when it could as easily be thought of as Leopard Gord. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page number 278, second paragraph. Several times during the next few hours, Gord had to scramble madly up a nearby tree in order to avoid other dangerous creatures, not accustomed to having a panther intrude on their domain. Not being certain that his immunity to weapons extended to the tusks of a boar or the jaws of a savage brown bear, Gord took flight as the wiser course. He could not run for long periods, but there were many areas where he could safely rest. Luck seemed to ride with him, too. He had caught one of the giant squirrels busy eating fungi, made a fast and delicious meal of it, and was taking a catnap in the leafy crotch of a galda tree when a dozen bugbears padded past as quietly as great cats. These giant goblins were heading west and seemed to be no part of the humanoid party, still several miles ahead. Gord watched through glowing green panther eyes as the humanoids passed, and the bugbears never realized he was there. Could these big goblins have actually heard him? Gord wasn't interested in finding out unless he had to. Another time he was taking a drink from a stream when his feline mind seemed uneasy, so Gord allowed it to have its way without seeking to interpret the cause of the tension. The panther jumped and spat, just avoiding the strike of a huge adder that was lurking at the bank of the watercourse, waiting for unwary prey. It took the whole day for him to catch up with the collection of humanoids and renegade humans traveling toward the realm of Uz. The company had halted to rest and forage for food. Gord restrained the cat urge to attack the losels he saw. He went wide around them and ahead of the humanoids. Again, no attacks this time, he reasoned. He would see if the dwarf could be lulled into a sense of security and safety. Then he would strike. Break. And it's you mentioned here The Galda fruit is mentioned that Chris brings up, and yeah, right back at the beginning of Saga of Old City, the Galda was brought up. It is a unique fruit to the Greyhawk campaign.
I think it said it was sour and salty.
And so now we know, imagine, this is the Vesvi Forest, and that was all the way back in the city of Greyhawk. So, and it seemed to be a fresh fruit there. So here it is growing in the deep of the Vesvi, and also somewhere around the city of Greyhawk, or at least close enough to get there while it's fresh. And so this Galda fruit, it's really surviving in very different climates. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page number 279 and the third paragraph down. Then an idea came to him that satisfied both man and panther. He lay in wait and eventually saw a man venture forth to answer the call of nature. Ord wondered why he would go so far from his fellows, so close to the dark. The brigand drew out a large flask and squigged great gulps of its contents. That explained that. He was a lone drinker who did not care to share his liquor with his associates. The panther leaped upon the unsuspecting outlaw and tore out his throat before the fellow knew he had been attacked. Gord was appalled at his desire to strike thus, and the panther's mind was repulsed at the reek of alcohol and the foul stench of the man. They compromised. Panther carried corpse into a tree and hid it, and man assumed the guise of brigand, using the fellow's cloak as a disguise. As he returned to his own form, it suddenly occurred to Gord that the shape-shifting was no longer a dreaded thing. The day of integration between cat and man had been beneficial. It made him realize that he had thought in cat fashion, or as close as a human could come to thinking thus, as long as he could remember. Certainly when he walked slender lines, balanced on roof edges, and ran along eaves, he was feline, just as his burglar appellation, Bobcat, attested. He could now shift from man to cat and back without hesitation, or reservation. There was no sense of ill or unnaturalness in so doing. This made Gord glad, for he had no choice in the matter anyway. As Gord walked into the encampment, he was surprised at the disordered nature of affairs. When he had spied upon it previously, the dwarven leader had kept order and discipline. But this time Abmi had allowed things to slip. The place was in chaos. "What's up, pal?" a drunken bandit asked as he staggered past Gord to relieve himself against a nearby tree. "Ah, nothing, pal. Got any sauce?" The fellow leered at Gord, patted a half-full skin slung around his shoulders and slurred, "Yep, but I ain't sharing it unless you got some to split with your old pal." And he emphasized just who the old pal was by striking himself hard enough on the chest to send himself stumbling backward a couple of steps. "Say, I don't recognize you. What's your name anyway?" he said, then laughed at his own joke. "You get it? Anyway." He reeled and laughed more. "I sure wish I could get some. And I'll take it anyway. Ar har har." "What?" asked the young thief, confused. "Who gives a pinch of coon crap anyway? Anyway, I'd be tick and damned happy to meet a man who's got balls enough to admit he'll get it anyway. What outfit you with, anyway?" Gord relaxed. This sot was so stupid with booze that he had asked a question and interpreted it as Gord's name. The dolt was calling him anyway, thinking it was his name. Ford realized that this very drunken fellow was his ticket into the camp without questions being asked. Gord handed him the flask he had taken from his earlier victim, watching to see if the brigand called Tick would recognize it. Tick merely took it and swilled brandly. Great stuff, both Gilly and Pegger got bottles too. Hey, you seen old Pegger round here? He went out to take a dump, and I bet the wild hogs ate him. Har, har, har. Nah, I ain't seen neither of them, Gord said. How come the camp is so relaxed tonight? Yesterday it was all that spit and polish bit. And now old Omni lets let up on us. You knows why. Tick puzzled over that a moment, helping himself to think by taking another pull from the flask of fiery liquor. That buggering little dwarf is a meanin'. Who can tell what's going through that dirty dwarf mind he's got? Yesterday he was jabbering and cursing and bossing us about all the time. Today he just sits on his horse and don't talk at all. And now he's holed up in his fancy-ass tent and letting us have some fun for a change. Hey, what's your outfit again? Loner just came in and signed up with that skinny elf called Keek. That's funny. I don't recall any loners being taken on. Gord put his arm around Tick's shoulders. Come on, old pal. Let's go and see if maybe Keek can explain it to you. The outlaw jerked away as if Gord were a leper. You full of crap, boy. I ain't going nowhere near that crazy little elf. Bastard. He's your boss. You go and talk to him. Drawing himself up with as much dignity as he could muster, the drunken brigand staggered away, anxious to find better company. Gord let him go. Before he had gone a dozen steps, however, Tick turned and came back. Wait a sec, chum. Keek rode off this morning with that creepy half-orc priest. What in hell you saying? Troubled, drunk as he was, the outlaw was suspicious and not about to let this statement pass, as he had the rest. Gord thought fast. Damn, Tick, you're right. That brandy is potent stuff. On another swig. Suspicious or not, Tick couldn't pass that up. Okay, and then you and me better see Captain Sawtooth and get things straight. Gord hit him solidly over the head with the pommel of his dagger, and the brigand collapsed without a sound. Brandy spilled out over him, and Gord let him lay where he was. Passed out in drunken stupor for all appearances. Tick would sleep for hours. Gord doubted anyone in the camp would be interested. There was already sufficient commotion to awaken the dead. Singing and shouting, arguing and fighting, and all the rest of things typical of a disorganized collection of brigands and humanoids, met for a rollicking good time. Something was certainly wrong. Gord approached the command tent. A motley collection of men and humanoids surrounded it, at a distance of about 10 paces. A bugbear challenged him in a barely intelligible common speech. Get your ass out of here, man. Not even a dog passes here. Putting on his most ferocious scowl, Gord faced the humanoid thing, glaring a challenge up at the towering form. Yet, your ass, Harry, Captain Sawtooth, sent me with a message for Obmi, personal-like. Give me the message and I'll pass it on, the bugbear said with a truculent sneer. Crap too, dumbass. You think the captain wants a big jerk like you knowing important information for the boss? Yeah, you smart-mouthed little man, is that so? How come he let you know it if it's so damn important? Gord put on an expression of mixed relief and chagrin. Okay, big guy, so you ain't so stupid as you look. Now I know why they put you on guard duty here, he added, as if amazed that he had to admit being outwitted by the giant goblin. I guess you can keep a secret. Bet your fat human ass I can, the guard snapped back. Well, all right, I'm going to break right here and just make a comment. First, you know, Chris mentioned in that about that Galda fruit that thought it was a tropical. I'm not quite sure. I had assumed that it was something, you know, near the city of Greyhawk, as it's a a fresh fruit. But again, you know, the fruits can travel some distance, and Greyhawk is a major port down the Velverdiva and also, you know, up the Sellenton. So it could have traveled quite a bit. To find it growing wild in the Vesvi is, that is certainly something. It's definitely, it could just be so magical a fruit that it can grow in any climate. Or it's a northern fruit that was brought down or only maybe grows at a certain time in the city of Greyhawk. It has been mentioned several times, the Galda. Then also Chris brings up that the catcord might have killed Tick, but Mangor just incapacitated him. And Tick, as a drunkenly unconscious Brigham, you know, is not going to attract any undue attention. From what Gord is saying, there is so much, you know, chaos going on right now in drunken revelry that there are bound to be a number of these human brigands and maybe some of the orcs too who are passed out drunk. So if somebody comes upon Tick, he's drunken and unconscious and he's not going to stir up any alarm. So it's a very wise move by Mangord there. All right, on page 282, let's see what is here. Now, we have here an example of, you know, the bugbear, the chief guard, and the limited intelligence. But still, even if their intelligence is a little limited, this bugbear is definitely, wary. And with a good sense of, you know, what following orders and what should be and shouldn't be. You know, and also, of course, a natural animosity to the human rather than to, you know, there would be a different interaction maybe with a humanoid. And definitely a different one who was a superior, regardless of race, like Keek or Obmi, being a dwarf and elf, but also among their own kind, there might be a lot of, you know, chest thumping and struggle for, you know, who's really in charge. But I do like that with a bugbear. All right. I'm going to restore it right here. It's page 282. And it is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 ninth paragraph from the end. Well, you got it now. Here goes. Only lean close so all the camp don't hear it. The bugbear did, keeping a wary eye upon Gord as he did so. Captain Sawtooth says that Obmi should come quick. That bastard of a Black Panther is over by our position, but it don't know we spotted it. Sawtooth, he thinks it's waiting till things quiet down before it starts eating us again. Floggin' Foogish, the bugbear explained, referring to some god of the giant goblins worshipped casually and swore by often. You ain't shittin' me, are you? All right, break. So the end of the night, and here, this is an amazing little piece of lore. There's a book called Monster Mythology by Sargent that is for non-human deities. And I obviously missed this.
I looked. I couldn't find it in there.
Yeah, I definitely have to add it, that Foogish. Foogish is a bugbear deity. We're just about done, so I'm going to leave that for tonight. That here, this is, you know, a nice little bit of lore we're getting right here. It's page 282, and we learn that there is a bugbear deity. You don't think the Flogging just seems like an exclamation, and I'm going to take it that Fugish is the name of the deity. So that is a very incredible little thing to get right here out of the blue. And a common enough name that Gord... See now, is this the bugbear's viewpoint that is a name that is common? See it, Chris. Or is it a name that Gord recognizes as a common explanation by bugbears? All right. I am going to summon up Craig and end it for tonight, and we'll be back tomorrow. Night, everybody. Let's get